Oak. Well, good evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2TTT, and this is the amateur radio station of the Bergen Amateur Radio Association, K2BAR, K2 Bravo Alpha Romeo. My name is Gordon, as I said before, and this is the TechNet. The TechNet is conducted every week on Thursday night at 9 p.m. and conducted for the express purpose of engaging in a dialogue about the technical aspects of amateur radio. Don't be intimidated by that thought. All aspects of amateur radio are inherently technical, and therefore any subject that comes to mind, comes to your mind, is welcome to be asked, inquired about, discussed on the net. So, the format for this net is a little different than the others. Our format is to check in with our call sign, our name, and whether or not we have a question or a comment for the net. The process, as I say, is a bit different. We're going to do it in an orderly manner, which I will do now. So, first things first, stations whose call signs begin with Kilo 2, please call K2BAR and let me know whether or not you have a question, a comment, or none of the above.
Okay, K2BAR. This is K2ZO. Yeah, I do have some comments in reference to our little project at Kitnight, and we'll be ready to discuss them and ask a few questions. Go ahead.
Excellent, Jim. Excellent, excellent. Any other Kilo 2s, please call K2BAR with your call sign name and whether or not you have a question or a comment.
Kilo 2, Zulu, Charlie, Dave, no questions or comments.
Dave, good evening to you, sir. Very fine. Any other Kilo 2s?
Kilo 2, Alpha Mike, India. Tony, I have a question.
Good evening, Tony. Welcome, and your question is so noted. Any other Kilo 2s? Let me mess up everybody's head. Any November 2s, please call. Or any Novembers, let's try it that way. Please call K2BAR.
November 2, Oscar Echo Lima. One question.
Your one question so noted. Any other Novembers, please call K2BAR. Call sign name and whether or not you have a question or comment or none of the above.
And that's 2K Jim, and no question at this point.
Good evening to you on S2K. So noted. Anybody else with the November call? Any Alpha calls, please call K2BAR. Okay, any Whiskey calls, any Whiskeys, please call K2BAR.
W2JEK, Don, one question.
Good evening, Don, W2JEK. Your question is so noted. Any other Whiskey stations, please call K2BAR with the call sign name and whether or not you have a question or a comment or none of the above for the net. Okay, very fine. Any, any Kilo stations, any other Kilo stations, please call K2BAR.
KO2, okay. No questions.
This is KC2PYB, no questions.
KA2BDU, and I do have a question. Helmut.
Came in rapid fire. KO2OK, KC2PYB, good evening to you. Bennett and Richard, you're noted with no questions or comments. Helmut, good evening to you. KA2BDU, I noted your question. Any other Kilo stations, please call K2BAR. Any other stations with or without questions or comments to the net, any call sign type, please call K2BAR. Okie doke. Well, let's rip them in order. K2ZO, you have a comment. Did you want to save the comment for a bigger attendance, or is this the right time?
No, this is okay. K2BAR, K2ZO. As you know, we've been fooling around with the interface to Rachel's Yaesu handy talkie to try to run it off her car. And even though we've gone up now in a much bigger inductor and a much larger capacitor, to the point where we can hear okay without any noise on the receive side. On the transmit side, it's like 30% of the audio is just coming out of the car. I guess the alternator whine or whatever it is. I'm not sure it's alternator or perhaps from the fuel injectors or what on that Korean car, but it's terrible. But I did notice that when you plug the cable in, it disconnects the battery. It would be nice if the battery stayed connected in the handy-talkie because it would act as kind of a filter, but it doesn't happen that way. What I'm trying to do now is use a three-terminal regulator. I'm thinking I'm using an LM338. Do you know if there are any fixed voltage three-terminal regulators that are up about 3 or 4 amps? Go ahead.
I've had to use pass transistors. I've heard tell, though, that with a judicious use of capacitors on the input and output, you can parallel those evil three-terminal regulators to get more current. But boy, that sounds scary to me. I wonder what else goes on in there. That may be something to consider, Jim.
I looked at that because I had some, some LM, some 7812s and 7809s, and I thought maybe I could parallel them. But that would be a big difference. I think you'd have to put some resistance in the output, like a tenth of an ohm or something like that, although that probably wouldn't be too bad. But the problem is, I want to make it simple, and I could always take an LM 7809 or 12 or 10 or whatever, and then wrap it around a transistor and use it that way. But it's kind of getting complicated. I'm just trying to make this thing simple, and I'll tell you, that car puts out one hell of a lot of noise, okay? It's some little Korean thing. I really don't know what it is. I didn't really look at it, but it's kind of uncomfortable for me to sit in it because I can't get out of it.
I think it's a Hyundai. I don't know if it's a scoop or one of the little sporty coupes.
Once I sit in it, I can't get out.
Comment? Bennett, to tell us what kind of car it is and then hand it to Doc.
I think it's a Hyundai, but it's a sport Hyundai. I can't remember if it's a scoop or what it is. It's one of the sport models from a Hyundai, I believe. Don?
Don, go ahead.
W2JK. Jim, you said when the power cord disconnects the battery. As I thought, between the interface and the... just as a try, see if the battery thing would do it. Rig a battery in between the interface and the radio and the power cord. In other words, have a battery there. Even if you just use dry cells to try it out, to see if the battery will calm the thing down enough, and it'll give you an idea what direction to go in. Back to net W2JK.
Yeah, that might be a good test.
Cells, and if you overcharge them, they'll explode.
K2BAR, K2Zero. K2BAR, K2Zero.
Yep, I'm working now, W2TTT. For some reason, my mobile rig is not.
Oh, okay. The question I had, this radio, when you plug in the power cord, it disconnects the internal battery. Had it left that connected, it would be nice, but apparently it disconnects it. Now, is that standard with most handy talkies?
Making it now.
Comment.
Making it now.
Now you are.
Yes, because they're worried about overcharges on either nickel metal hydride or lithium ion batteries. They explode rather violently when they're overcharged.
Comment.
Go ahead, Bennett.
Hey, Jim, that handy talkie she has, I've had the same one, and I used to charge it, plugged into the car. And are you plugging it into the top of the radio, or into the battery pack, or where?
You're plugging the cable into the top of the radio. And if you don't have the cable, the other side of the cable plugged into the cigar lighter, when you plug that cable in, the radio goes off. So I know it's disconnecting the internal power supply.
Yeah, I'm just thinking for a second. I still have the radio here. I'll check and put power through the top of the radio and see if there's anything coming out the bottom. I think it charges. I'm pretty sure it charges it, but it may disconnect it from running the radio.
Yes, it does. If you look at the schematic, what you see is that there is some current limiting, and indeed, if you just take the source of 12 volts and plug it in, it will slowly trickle charge the battery. However, the battery is not used to power up the radio at that time. There's a circuit that gets popped in when you push that thing in so that it doesn't do that. But it does charge the battery at like about, 30, 40 mils.
Okay, that's what I thought. I thought it would charge the battery, but not necessarily run off the battery anymore. And I believe that's the same with my new Yaesu F6. Same thing happened.
I guess it's probably a good idea because somebody could really fry the battery.
Shredder, lithium ion. Just wondering which kind it is. I blew up a nickel metal hydride pack because I had raised my supply voltage that was floating batteries, floating into a rig runner, and in order to get a little extra voltage, I wanted to, a little extra quieting in my receiver, I upped the voltage, which worked great, except I had forgotten that I had a nickel metal hydride pack across that power supply, and it overheated and exploded rather violently, leaving lots of black ash around my office and a chunk of my wall missing.
Oh, that's
fine. Lesson learned.
Well, attention, too.
Comments again. Jim, was the only source of car power you were using the cigarette lighter at this point?
It was a cigarette lighter. And what I'd like to do is to take and put a cable across the battery and see that may stop the whole problem. That may solve everything. Well, she wants to run an amplifier in there, and of course, she ran a cable, but she didn't have connectors. So, if we hook right directly to the battery, the whole problem might just go away.
At least be significantly reduced. I agree.
But it still would be nice to have one of these things that would work just in the cigar lighters for occasional use in like a rented car or something.
It probably would, except for that car.
Thinking of wiring straight to the battery because you're not right now?
Well, we're plugged into the cigar lighter, so I guess we've got that additional resistance in the leads coming up and things like that.
This is of number 4 from the battery fused at both ends.
Now, I've done that same thing that we're trying to do with her car in my car, and I've not had any problem. Plug the thing into the cigar lighter and go into the handy-talkie. And although I do hear something a little bit way down, it's not anywhere near what it is on the level of that Korean thing.
If she's willing to have some number 4 run from the battery underneath the dash somewhere, there's two approaches: doing it yourself or paying some guy, $30 or $40 to run 2 pieces that way and be done with it. And, you can take care of your own fusing and stuff like that yourself, but if she doesn't feel confident running the wire through her sports car's firewall, the experts at these high-end stereo places will do it lickety-split and, two $20 bills and you're good.
Well, she already did it herself. She ran no cable, but she doesn't have connectors to get onto the battery, but she already took the car apart enough to get it. I was quite surprised when she showed me what she had done. So she has already run the cable. We just have to hook it up.
Fiasco and all that other stuff, that you're working too hard to use a cigarette lighter when you need to spend a whole lot less energy putting some appropriate metal terminators on the end of the wires and making it happen for him. I mean,
This is like painful.
Remember, you used to have alternator wine, and I heard a couple different filters. Was that what fixed the wine on your transceiver in your truck?
No, the only thing that solved it is going to the battery of the piece of number four, like I was just saying. Well, the story is you used the number four. Take this from here and take Tony's question. That's W2TT2. TBAR.
K2AMI with a question.
Okay, I just think that to conclude the other matter, unless someone has another comment, I think number four to the battery is the right answer at this point. That's the only way I could get rid of whatever noise is in my vehicle, and I have an 11-year-old Ford van. So I don't think it's the van or the type of car. I think it's the way we're wiring. You got to ground to the chassis, and you have to bring at least one, if not two leads from the battery. It sounds like that's been done. I think that's the right way to do it. Terminate that correctly, I think the world will be a better place. K2ZO, do you have any more comments? W2TTTFR, K2BAR.
Okay, K2BAR, K2ZO. No, I'm beginning to think that's the answer. But it certainly would be nice to have an interface that you could walk with your handy-talkie into any car that you had or borrowed or rented or whatever and just plug into the cigar lighter and have it operate. That Korean car that she's got there, my God, it's putting out a lot of stuff. I mean, it's like 30-40% of the signal is, even with the filters on there, it's just the noise from the alternator.
Yeah, I've seen some things that are like, they're not spring-loaded, but they go on a quarter 20 bolt and are add-on tabs, and then you can run the wire out of the car, out of from under the hood and into the car through the door and bring power in that way off the battery. And that generally works pretty well as well, but you got to be careful to, you know, make sure you don't melt your wires or crush your wires and stuff. But to me, that's the ultimate in portable options when you have things like this. So I had to rent a car or a small truck when I was on a trip recently, and I was fortunate that I was able to actually run the 100 watts of my 7000 just fine from a cigarette lighter. So anyway, I understand and I sympathize with the problem, but right. Some vehicles just are obstinate. God knows this man is, and sounds to me like Rachel's coupe is as well. Alrighty. I'm going to put the ribbons on it unless Jim has more. K2ZO, W2T, or K2BAR.
That's it for here.
K2AMI, K2BAR. Your question, sir.
Okay, here we go. I've made a couple comments that I've been working with the Carolina Wyndham, and I think you have also there, Gordon. The Carolina Wyndham has a junction point where the two dipole elements come together. It's a 4-to-1 balm. And the balm, again, connects to a matching scope with the trap on it before the feed line. Well, I've got that 4-to-1 balm. I was able to buy a 4-to-1 balm at the flea market. Ferrite cores in it. I think you named one and tried the same one. And I found that it worked very well. Now, I was given by, not to be named, other ham radio operator, a 4-to-1 balm. It does not have ferrite cores in it. It's an air core balm bound around a small piece of PVC pipe. There's obviously four trembles to it, but I am suspicious. How can I prove that a 4-to-1 balm? Obviously, one end of the bomb is going to have a 50 ohm impedance. The other end will have a very high impedance, probably 300 or 400. I'd like to have suggestions on how I could test that bomb and prove that it was a 4-to-1 bomb.
Put a resistor on it.
Resistor on one side and plug it into a 434 if you want.
Plug it into a 134. I didn't get to understand that comment. Repeat it.
On this side, and put the other side to a coaxial connector. Check its SWR, it should be flat. Yeah, the other way to do it is to take the terminating resistor on either side of your 50 ohm or a 200 ohm, although it really doesn't matter, actually, and just measure the impedance using an antenna analyzer.
An antenna analyzer might be the tool to use that. I was envisioning running a low-power transceiver to the point, putting a non-inductive resistor on the other side, but I don't think my 2-watt carbon resistor lasts very long. Accidentally overdrove the antenna analyzer might be more easily answerable.
NS2K.
NS2K, pick it up.
Yeah, I think this is a classic case where MFJ is your friend. Where, use the antenna analyzer, put it on the 50-ohm side, what you think is the 50-ohm side. And then if you think it's a 4-to-1, put a 200-ohm resistor on the other, on the antenna side of the ballon. And it should look rather like a 50-ohm resistor, if it truly is a 4-to-1.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I wasn't thinking about the analyzer. I was thinking about an SWR meter, a transceiver, higher power carbon resistors, which are getting lower in that direction. But I think the analyzer sounds like the answer. So thank you very much. Turn it back to the net control. Pick it up.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what I was saying. And you can use the 2-watt, 200-ohm resistor. You just have to keep your transmission short and low power. That'll work fine, Tony. But if you have the analyzer, go for it. And if you need one, I know where there's at least two to be had. You could probably ask me, probably ask Jim if you don't have one handy. Although I think you're the keeper of the club, so maybe that's the right answer. Aye, aye. Alrighty, W2JEK, Mr. Don, you had a question, K2BAR.
And K2BAR, the net, W2JEK, good evening, everybody. I was thinking about, I have a 40-meter dipole that I also use on 15 meters. I've heard of a thing called a sleeve dipole, which is nothing more than a halfway of a wire running parallel to the driven wire. In other words, you have a every dipole fed with coax, and then you just run this thing along in parallel to it, no connection to it electrically, physically, just it's 2 inches away from it with little spaces for the length of this wire, which is a half wave long, and of course it's the center of this extra wire is the center of the where the feed point is. I saw an article in XSAI's book where he had a 3-band antenna for 30, 17, and 12 meters done that way. I was wondering if anybody's had any experience using that type of a configuration. Back to that W2JK.
On the net for that one, or heard of that. Interesting. But they clearly exist. It's off-center fend, apparently, or can be. Is your version that way?
What I've seen is that the, in other words, if you let's say I have a 66-foot dipole for 40 meters, and I want to put, say, a 10-meter dipole, which is what I'm planning on doing, which is about, say, a 16 feet of wire, maybe 17 feet of wire, depending on where you want it in the band. And the center of that 17 feet, which would be about 8.5 feet from the either end, would be the center, would be where the center insulator is feeding this center-fed 40-meter dipole. If anybody had any experience using one of these.
Not at all. I'm trying to get a handle on this thing, but I'm not seeing... I'm seeing a commercial version or two, but I'm not seeing any diagrams.
The only way to do it is to put the thing up, and it happens with it. Take an SWR reading before and after, and it happens. And also using maybe a parallel dipole or two, say 8.5 foot pieces of wire attached to the each end of the center later, and again run either right angles or parallel to the exer. That too, but these dipoles sound interesting. Anyway, well, nobody seems to have any experience with it, so I'm going to just try it out sometime. Thanks anyhow. Back to net, W2JK.
Stopped. We do. Already. In my case, I had an issue with my Wyndham that it's not quite working right, and I found out why. I did a Carolina Wyndham 40, which means that there's 25 feet of wire, 41 feet of wire fed by a 4-to-1 balance, a 10-foot length of coax, and I think in the specification I saw it was RG58. I used 8X, which is maybe a problem. And then on the other side of the isolator, I used a 50-foot run of RG58. But alas, I found out that it needs to be 80 some odd feet, 86 feet, I think. So I have screwed that up. So I'm just kind of throwing out there to Tony Verson and the rest of the net, how badly did I screw up, and is that a problem? Or are those problems using the wrong kind of coax there and the insufficient length on the ultimate feed line?
That the 10-foot section that you are questioning in, that you use RG8X rather than RG8, I don't think it's a problem. The impedance is the same. It's only a matter of better loss or lower loss in the RG8X. I think if anything, it's got to do with the length of it from to the end of the trap to your... I didn't measure out 80-some-odd feet, but I did have to use a 100-foot roll of cable that I had, and I didn't cut the cable. I used a 100-foot roll, and that seemed to work very nicely. I had a pretty good SWR on all the bands that it was supposed to work on, generally less than 2, 1.5, 1.3, in that area. And I think the length of the cable might the whole antenna with critical point.
That goes between the line isolator and the shack, not the one that goes between the line isolator and the balun, right?
I would guess so. I saw that notation about 80 some odd feet between the line isolator and the I used the 100-foot length of cable that I purchased without cutting anything off of it, and that seemed to work okay. What did you use for a line isolator?
A commercial line isolator that I had picked up at a ham fest a while back. Or not even a ham fest, I actually picked it up from a ham. Gave it to me years ago. I've been sitting on it for a while. But you use the full 100-foot length, is that what you're saying?
Join that. I use the entire 100-foot length.
Maybe the answer is just add another 50 feet to it and be done with it. Okay. Very good. Well, that's certainly interesting. I hadn't really thought much about that, but, you know, we'll certainly give that some thought, as it were. Anyway, anybody have any other wisdom about Carolina Wisdom? Wyndham?
W2JEK, just asking, I guess, Tony, what bands exactly is this antenna supposed to work on?
Works on 40, but 10, 15, and 20 were the other bands that I checked the work bands, 10, 15, 20, and 40.
Okay, how was your 15 meters?
I found it very well. It was under 2, like 1.5 or so as I recall. I don't have written numbers in front of me, but I know the range of the antenna tuner or radio that I was using, antenna tuner, would pick it up very nicely.
One of the magazines I followed an antenna, and he felt like that low center fed, and he fed it with 450 ohm ladder line, and the ladder line had to be a specific wavelength of multiple of I think multiple of a half wave on 15 meters with the velocity factor figured in. What he did, I think, for 10, it was a 40 meter dipole, let's say, for 66 feet. And for the 40, 20, and 10 meter bands, he used a 1-to-1 Allen. Go to 15 meters, because he used the 4-to-1 Allen. And this was all right in the shack. He had enough ladder line, of course, multiples of half wave or a quarter wave of the meter band is what he had. What you had to do to make this thing play on 15 meters. But I asked about the question. Thank you. Back to that, W2JK.
I mean, it turned over J-pole, but, okay. Tony, I mean, the sleeve dipole, I'm just thinking about that. But anyway, Tony, did you build the 80-meter version or the 40-meter version? How long was your flat top?
I got the 40-meter version, 41 and 25 with the legs.
There in the balance? The section of coax between the isolator and the balance.
That's specified in the Article 10 sheet.
Very good. The other thing I'm thinking about is that perhaps my problem is that the vertical section is about 8 feet from my house. Now, I don't have aluminum siding. I don't even have aluminum flashing on the inside of the insulation. So I'm wondering, though, if that's a problem.
I don't think it's a problem relative to the vertical radiator or the actual line, but where are the elements of the antenna? Are they very close to the house? Are they out the backyard, or are they close? The vertical section is the coaxial cable. It's got a shield on it, and shouldn't be affected too much by the metal nearby. My vision.
The 10-foot vertical section becomes part of the resonant part of the antenna. So I think that may be it. Found out what my problem is, by the way. Jim, you'll laugh at this if you're listening. I'm idling the car, and the car has low voltage when I idle, so this particular radio is touchy. That's why I wasn't able to secure a signal into the repeater reliably. I have to run up the engine a little bit. Anyway, so with that in mind, Tony, now the wire is in the clear. It goes from the end of my, I have an outrigger on the tower over the middle of the driveway. It goes diagonally to the back of my property to a tower that's at 20 feet of Rhone 25 with, 15 feet of masting shoved in the top of it, holding up the other end of the antenna. The ballon just barely clears the roof line, though. It's kind of parallel to the roof line of the house.
That physical installation there was a relocation of the ballon or the redirection of the antenna, and apparently you limited, so I don't think we have an answer to what's causing the problem at this point. I had good results.
The isolator to the shack length of coax. That's what I have to do. Just an FYI, I also put up a 40-meter Envis antenna, and it is working kick-ass. It works better than the 80-40 trap dipole that I have that is on the other side of the property that works, that's 35 feet or 40 feet in the air. The Envis antenna works better to Europe than the trap dipole does. It's elevated. Go figure.
That's too good.
Hey, Jim.
Ah, there we go. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Yeah, I'm looking forward. If we can get Dick over at one of these points, we can maybe shoot some stuff in the air. Anyway, one of the things that I am sometimes aware of at work is velocity of propagation and loss, of course, with different kinds of coax. And there's a considerable difference between foam and solid dielectric, where solid dielectric velocity of propagation is only 66%, where the common foam is more like 79%. So, you know, if you think you have a quarter wave, be cautious. do the calculation using the velocity for that kind of wire. And it can go all the way to 95% if you have open ladder line. It's you know, huge difference. But no, I'm pretty impressed with your report on the Envis. Obviously, it's not supposed to do that, but oh, what the heck if it does?
It is kind of neat. I'm scratching my head over it, but anyway. I have the ability with one radio to use the 8040 trap dipole, which is, you know where that is, that's up high on my property. And then the other two antennas are on the Pro 3 on a three-position switch. So I can flip instantaneously to an external switch. And it's very disconcerting when signals disappear on the Wyndham. It's really kind of bizarre, but anyway. Sometimes I use the Wyndham just because I don't hear as well, by the way, but I can't transmit on it because it doesn't work as well. So I found myself switching between the two antennas just to make it more pleasant to hear sometimes. But the signals were definitely down. Alrighty, I think we've beaten this one to death, and we have one more question before I do another roll call. So anybody else want to talk about this subject, or we want to move on? That was good. KA2BDU, your question, Mr. Helmet. This is K2BAR.
Don't forget me.
Dr. Helmet's question.
KA2BDU, good evening to all. And here is my question. What frequency should I listen to in order to hear voices from outer space? Over.
Like the space station, the International Space Station, or shuttle flights, things like that? Or are you looking to do the SETI thing?
No, negative. I like to listen to the other planets. Over.
If you don't mean literally voices, you mean other planets and such. I don't know. That's a good question. I know if you point a 2-meter antenna, for instance, at the sun, you will definitely hear it. You hit a point of 432 antenna at the sun, you will definitely hear it as well, if you have a decent receiver. But specific planets, I don't know. That's a really good question.
The federal government listens all the time to many frequencies, but that's probably unknown to us what they use. Over.
I think somebody had a question or a comment for Helmet. W2TTT, K2BAR.
W2JEK. W2JEK. I know they have that radio telescope down in Arecibo in Puerto Rico there, which is actually in a valley between the mountains. And apparently they're looking at anything that they can pick up on that antenna, and they're looking for any kind of a little something that's different than what they've from what they've seen before. I don't know exactly what frequency they're on. I did have a friend, AA3SJ, was down into the one Virginia, and they're listening. And the same kind of a deal. They're listening for signals from outer space or whatever. And they don't want anybody within 40 miles of the place to have any kind of radio transmitters. This is one of those quiet zones, they call it. And they saw some kind of a signal while he was there, and they said, oh, that's somebody in the area with a cell phone. They're not looking for cell phones, but they ticked that thing up from quite a ways off. So expensive some of that equipment is. Of course, they're not interested in cell phones. They're interested in some out there where Elm was talking about. But exactly what frequency or frequencies, I don't know. Some of them were related to the frequency of the hydrogen atom or something like that. Like a common thing that we'll have, both us and whoever else was out there would be dealing with hydrogen or some other element that would internal frequency kind of a thing, what, how that's determined. That's at WTK.
Well, frequency of a hydrogen atom, if I recall, is around the 2.5 gig area, if I remember. I think that's one of the reasons why we have 2.4, 2.3 gigs. So it's somewhere in that general range. So that might be a good start, Helmet, okay?
Thanks, gentlemen. Back to net.
So why don't you look at the resonant frequency of hydrogen atoms? That's probably not a bad idea. If you Google search that, I think you'll find it. But I seem to recall one of the reasons why we have the 2.3 to 2.4 and change gig ham band, and why it's a PAR 15 band as well in that area is because of that. Alrighty. N2OEL, one more from you, and then we'll ask for more questions and comments and confusions and make some announcements. This is K2BAR.
Okay, mine's a interesting antenna one again. As you know, I'm going to erase these sets. I have trouble hearing one station, my omnidirectional antenna. So my question is, of course, if I put a beam up, I don't think I would be able to get to other station. Question is, got on 2 meters, allegedly 11.6 dB gain. I probably went as far as I can with a GP9. Possible to use both a omnidirectional and a beam at the same time. Aim the beam at the one station that I have trouble with, both on transmit, and transmit on both antennas at the same time, and receive on both antennas at the same time. Is that a possibility?
Compromises, and you have some problems. But if you took a two-port Wilkinson power divider and assuming that the antennas are just in different directions, not you don't care. I mean, ideally you should feed them with the same amount of coax, but in this case, since your antennas aren't matching, it doesn't even matter. I would just get yourself a Wilkinson power divider, point one, feed one side to one antenna and one to the other. Yeah, you're going to get some screwed up pattern, but you'll achieve the desired results. Anybody else have any comments along that line? This is K2BAR.
W2JEK, why not get a good antenna on the station you can't hear?
As well, but, what he needs is an omnidirectional antenna to hear most people, and a directional antenna to hear or to work with the other guy. So if you can afford the 3 dB loss in the general population and overcome it with, let's say, a decent directional antenna for the station that's giving you trouble, I think you'll do fine. I think that'll actually work pretty well.
Does the power divider have 50 ohm inputs and outputs? If that's the case, what would be wrong with me taking and running, say, low power 20 watts into it, having two 10 watt outputs? I just happen to have two amplifiers, one's 160 watts, one's 140 watts. I can put one amplifier on the antenna. Would that work?
It could work. You might end up with some interesting oscillations between the two amplifiers, though. The station that expressed their one-syllable groaning opinion, could you go W2TTT K2BAR?
And S2K, you're going to have some kind of a weird pattern. you add, two different patterns at random phase, and anyway, you're going to get some really, really ugly stuff. And I'm not sure why you'd be running all that power anyway. Shouldn't be necessary for anything that we would have to do, other than contesting work.
My point is, I'm not so sure I'd go the amplifier route. Put the amplifier before the power divider if you're going to go down that road at all. That's kind of my message, and I sense in the manner of speaking that's Jim's as well, Noel.
You know that encounter in Western Storm? I'm down in the valley. The valley's so low. If I'm down in the valley between Summit Avenue and Hackensack and Maywood Avenue and Ridgewood, Maywood, sorry. I'm down second house. There's two houses between me and the stream. In every direction, except toward Tony's house, I have hills rising above me as much as 100 feet. No way can I get an antenna high enough for that hill.
There's only so much that you can do to overcome the severe lack of line of sight at VHF or UHF.
If there's enough gain to be had out of an antenna, that will solve the problem. I guess here's my question, Noel. Can you try using the beam by itself to bring the one station in first? If you establish that works, you can take a Wilkinson power divider and feed two antennas and see if the horrible distortion that Jim was alluding to is introduced in the pattern to the point where the presence of the Omnia antenna and the loss of 3 dB to feed it will be an issue for you.
Maybe I just don't have to worry about transmitting. Maybe I could just use the receiver as the one on the Omni instead of power like a 150 watts. I'll run 160 watts because they can hear me now. I just have a hard time hearing them. So that way I think I might solve the problem without the interference patterns and all that other stuff.
To mute the second receiver when you're transmitting, that'd be fine.
But wouldn't I have a problem with 160 watts on omnidirectional antenna and have the beam, 20 feet away, 30 feet to cook something?
Hey, what you need to do is you need to mute the receiver. So when you transmit on the other radio, you need to ideally switch the other antenna out of the line to a essentially a dummy load would be good.
Question, W2JK. I have a question for Noel. I was just wondering how bad those stations, the stations you hear good, how bad would they be if you were on the beam? You use that exclusively. Use the beam on the weak station, and the other stations would be on the sides and edges of the beam, the back of the beam maybe, but would they be loud enough that you could copy them using the omnidirectional antenna?
So Justin has said what? Ramsey is down in the noise. I can barely hear them. They light up the center tuning indicator, but they don't even go to S1. Tony is at 9 plus 40. Jerry is 9 plus 20. The other stations are in between. But just the one station, so I figure if they were net control, I couldn't hear them. Problem. Toya.
You get your antennas higher up in the air?
Yeah, it's hard to go higher than I am. I got it's on the roof of the house, 17 feet tall, the antenna itself, and it's on top of a 10-foot pole. About as much I'm going to do it, I'll go into a tower or climb in a tree. Into a...
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, just to put it in perspective, when I got the opportunity to put the G7-144 on top of 65 or so feet of masting, things got much better. Yeah, I'm down in a little bit of a hole. Let's put it this way. My house is less than 50 feet above sea level, or just at 50 feet above sea level. But all the surrounding ground is 100 or more. So, you know, I have a similar problem to yours with a much more pronounced local problem, if you will. And as far as local horizon, I mean, within a block or two, or in some cases, you know, 100 feet from my antennas, you know, the property's baseline jumps up 20 feet. So when I put the base of the G7-144 at 63 feet, I guess it was, 64 feet, something like that, now I think about it, a profound improvement was made. My advice. Another 20 feet of masting sounds to be like the right answer, or tower or something. And yeah, I mean, I have a 45-foot tower and 20 feet of masting, and it was a ton of work just to get that 20 feet of masting up through that tower. It's really crazy, but it's 3/8 wall, too, so it's, you know, it's a stout piece of aluminum by any measure. Alrighty, anything else on this subject, please call K2BAR. With or without questions or comments, please call K2BAR.
K2AMI with a comment.
Hey.
Gun helmet inquiry. I've heard that something called the SETI leak. I've been trying to get on my computer to look at the SETI leak, and they listen to outer space voices. I can't get to that right now with my computer. I wonder if anybody has played with that or knows exactly what the SETI leak does concerning those outer space things.
Comment.
Yeah.
NS2K. Yeah, one of the things that I used to participate in was SETI at home. And they have, they're the guys with the receiver on Arecibo, one of many, many receivers, but a data recorder where they're collecting, you know, big chunks of data and then distributing it around to, you know, thousands of participants at home that are contributing computer time to do the Fourier transforms and, you know, all the heavy math involved in analyzing the signal. But yeah, I just went through this. They're not real specific about what frequencies they're listening to, but needless to say, they're not looking at near planets. They're looking, you know, more in deep space in that case. But I did look at the top participants, and I thought it was kind of funny. While there are some that are up in the 200,000 work unit class, when I quit, I don't know, two, 3 years ago, I had about 50,000. Well, the number 20 individual participant right today still only has 54,000. So I think I did pretty good. But that was almost entirely using my own hardware, although I did cheat a little bit and have, anyway, my office machine do a little work. But it certainly wasn't my fastest. Anyway, no, that was kind of amusing. Didn't have to heat just anywhere near as much in the wintertime, and it got kind of warm in here in the summer, so I kind of stopped some of that foolishness. Anyway, back to that. Other comment for Tony. I'm sorry, 400 ohm resistor on the high impedance side of the transformer should look like 50 at the analyzer. Back to net, NS2K.
About 200 ohms. 200
ohms. The square of the ratio, is it not?
It's a 4-to-1 balance, so it's 200 ohms.
The 200 ohms, or 4 times the voltage?
All I know is that I've put 200 ohms on a 4-to-1 balun, it'll read 50 ohms on my analyzer.
Okay, okay. So they're talking impedance ratio, not turns ratio. Okay.
Yes, sir.
That is correct. It's impedance matching. 200 to 50, that's the game plan.
Okay, got it. No problem.
Wouldn't you be confounded with a voltmeter? Anyway. Sorry, Jim. Alrighty. Anything more on... Oh, well, I do have one question or a comment to Helmuth about his dilemma. One of the reasons why you're not going to see a lot published on specific frequencies where, like, the SETI, League, SETI, by the way, search for extraterrestrial intelligence. The reason why they don't publish the frequencies that they primarily listen on is that they don't want to have people screwing with their heads. I've met a couple of the SETI League folks, and there's one fellow who is a bit of an unusual character. He's brilliant, but he's absolutely off the wall. If someone wants to know who I'm referring to, I'll see you in person, I'll tell you, but you can call me on the phone, but I had trouble getting straight answers to this fellow about the time of the day, let alone such things that they may not want to divulge, like, you know, frequencies and things like that, but I had the impression this person may have had help tying his shoes in the morning. I'll just leave it at that. I'm being a little harsh, but anyway, he was absolutely brilliant, and it was very clear that he was deadly serious about his dedication to the SETI League, and he's well known too. So, but I think it's a worthwhile effort, and you know, Jim, I'm amazed. So you had over 50,000 or so work units donated, and the current number one person has got 50,000 work units donated. Boy, that's kind of depressing. I'm wondering if they're lacking in participants. How many people do they have helping them now?
Oh, I don't know. It's thousands, but no, the high individuals are in the 200,000, 240, something like that, class. But number 20 is only about 54,000, so I wouldn't be that far down. I think I was, I don't remember. I wasn't that far down the list when I finally shut it down.
Oh, man.
By some chance, Gordon?
Siddharth, or do you have more on this? We can continue on if you have more. K2BDU, K2BAR.
Yeah, comment, K2ZO.
Ahead, Jim.
Okay, a number of I invited a SETI guy to come to the Barra meeting, and he did, and one of the things he talked about was the frequency that they were listening at, which was 21 gigahertz. And they had a facility, believe it or not, at one of the colleges in New York City. And I was quite surprised that, you know, he said, well, at 21 gigahertz, it's pretty quiet. So that there's no noise from all that whatever city stuff that's there. And he had a very interesting story to tell. So it was quite interesting. But... 21 gigahertz was the number that he mentioned.
Dan, I got news for you. It's probably gotten a little busier up there since that last Barra talk on the subject.
Oh, I'm sure.
Interesting. K2BDU, you have any more on this or questions, follow-ons that you'd like to make? This is K2BAR.
KA2BDU. No, just, Gordon, you know where I stand, and you can judge me, but the time is 22:13, and the temperature is 19 degrees, over and out.
So, you're using a Celsius thermometer, so that's a good thing. Temperature, but okay. We have a time, and that's a good thing, and we have a temperature. Alrighty. Anything else for everybody else? This is K2BAR.
W2JEK with a question. K2BAR, W2JEK, do you copy over? BAR, W2JEK?
Yeah, I hear you fine. It seems that I have to go check my battery contacts because I'm having low battery voltage on my voltmeter on my car is fine, such like that. The problem is I'm having trouble with my the aforementioned number four wire to my radio for my battery. I think I'm wanting to rig runner voltage drop and maybe cleaning up and tightening up the connector on the battery and getting some low voltage here.
Yeah, okay, Gordon. I had another question. If you heard on.
Of course. Go right ahead.
I was talking to Joe, K2JT, the other day. He has a butternut HF6V, all-band vertical. And they feed that with 50-ohm coax, except there is a matching stub, which I think is to promote better match on the 20-meter band, of 72-ohm coax that goes from the antenna to a L259, and then they have a barrel connector from the, this is starting at the antenna, they have spay bugs on the antenna end of this matching stub, PL259 to a barrel connector to the 50-ohm coax to the shack, and we're trying to figure out what the length of that matching stub should be. I don't know if anybody familiar with that have one of these butternut verticals that can help out.
Helmet, go ahead.
No, I don't have a question.
Just out of curiosity, is the butternut design published, like the manual or somewhere? Yeah, I know, like Chris Kraft and other manufacturers publish their designs, so you can actually look them up. And if you really wanted to replicate the antenna, I don't know if they do that for the butternuts, over.
I didn't copy most of that, Gordon. I think your 4 gauge is more like 24 gauge.
All right, is this any better?
Is that good now, Gordon?
Okay. Yeah, I just had to move. What I was referring to was that you have to go look maybe online to see if the manual for the butternut vertical is published.
Oh, okay, that could be a possibility. I'll have to try that and see what happens. I know he bought the antenna used, and the guy gave him a piece of coax that was supposed to be the matching stub. And it never worked right. I guess the thing got water in it over the years. We're looking at the thing the other night, and we're thinking, well, this should have been it never did match right on 20 meters. But I looked at it the other night. He says, I want to try it anew, because he thought the matching stub had deteriorated. Well, and behold, we look at this thing, it's a piece of 50-ohm cable. I brought up some RG11 and trying to figure out a way to get that up and running. At any rate, back to that. W2JK.
Yeah, okay. Very fine. Well, it's an interesting experience. I mean, I have various verticals. I have like a 18 AVQ or 14 AVT or something like that.
vertical that I inherited, and I'll be damned if I know how it goes back together. I think it's that. Either that or it's a butternut. No, it's not a butternut. The butternut has all sorts of ishigas hanging all over it, but one day I got to just figure out what it is that I have, what condition it's in, and attempt to perhaps put it on the air with a bunch of radios. That'd be a good thing. Anyway, any more for Don? Anybody can help him with the butternut? All right. Well, I'm using my HT at this point to make sure that I can get in. It's kind of goofy, but all right. Are there any other announcements or check-ins for the net with questions? Please call K2BAR. All right, everybody, just a couple of quick reminders. The BARA meeting is not this Sunday. It's Sunday the 7th, which is a week from Sunday, and it's at the Red Cross Building in Ridgewood. We gather at 7 p.m., and the meeting starts at 7:45. All are welcome to attend, members or not. And, of course, we have our 10-meter net on 28350 at 9 p.m. on Mondays. K2ZO is hosting on Tuesdays on, I think, 443-100 or 444-100. KF2ID runs the 440 net, again, at 9 o'clock. On Wednesdays, N2OEL runs the chat net, the basic check-in chat net. For BARA on Wednesdays again at 9 o'clock on 146.79, and then we're back to Thursdays on 146.79 for the TechNet. W2TTT is your host. In any case, the repeaters are provided courtesy of the Bergen County FM Association, our brother club, and we encourage people to support that organization through their membership and thank them for the use of their repeaters. We thank the Almighty God for the use of 28350 and the FCC and K2ZO. On that note, I'm going to wish everybody a good night and thank everybody for a fine net. It was a good and interesting net tonight. This is K2BAR Securing Station and returning the repeater to normal amateur use. This is W2TTT. We'll be standing by and clear. Godspeed.